Yes.
All right, so good afternoon, everyone. I'd call the committee meeting for procurement and contracting to order for July the 21st. Will the clerk take the roll?
Supervisor Marquez?
Present.
Supervisor Miley?
Present. All right, so we can start with our first item, informal construction procurement update.
Good afternoon, Supervisors. Kimberly Gassaway, Director of General Services Agency. Next slide. So today we'll be presenting on the informal construction procurement report for our Building Maintenance Department. As requested by your board, we'll review the informal construction limits for GSA BMD, discuss our outreach efforts, discuss impact of the qualified contractors list on BMD informal construction. On April 2nd, 2024, your board adopted an ordinance to align the Alameda County Administrative Code with the current and future informal bid limits that exist in the California Public Contract Code for Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, and to authorize the purchasing agent to award informally bid contracts for public projects. Currently, GSA contracts for public projects up to $75,000 as approved by the purchasing agent. And then contracts over that, we choose to bring those to the board for your approval. The current informal bidding limit is $220,000. The Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, enacted in 1983 under Public Contract Code, allows for establishment of a qualified contractors list. This list must be renewed each calendar year. And GSA established the qualified contractors list a couple years ago, and the contractors can register to be added to that list every year based on their contractor's license. New contractors can join the list at any time throughout the year. GSA is currently using the 2025 qualified contractors list for bidding. Notices inviting informal bids procured under Chapter 4.24 of the Admin Code for contracts up to $220,000 are emailed to qualified contractors list based on their contractor's license. The list is promoted on the GSA website. The link is provided for people to take a look at. We continue to provide outreach to notify contractors of the qualified contractor opportunities. In addition to the list, notifications are sent through Meriwether and Williams National Association of Minority Contractors, eGov Bulletin, to subscribers of GSA Construction Current Contracting Opportunities, East Bay Contractor Weekly Newsletter, and Construction Trade Journals. GSA solicits contractor databases such as the Alameda County Transportation Commission, California Department of General Services, Port of Oakland, California Department of Transportation, and the California United Certification Program Supplier Clearinghouse. GSA also distributes information through our 16 local chambers of commerce. We present Alameda County Public Works Agency building opportunities for Bob Breakfast as well. So to give you a sense of the list right now, there are a total of 293 contractors on the list. 131 or 45% are local contractors. The following compares the informal construction contracts for years 2022 through 2023 and 2024, including up to May of 2025, or 5 months. As you can see, the informal construction contracts in 2022, 67.4% or 87 contracts went to local contractors. 23, it was 75.5%, 278 contracts went to local contractors. 24, 62.1% or 226 of these contracts went to local contractors. And in 5 months of the fiscal year 2025, 63 or 66% went to local contractors. So the majority of the work is being done by local contractors. We find this to be a successful program. Just to give you a little more information, the following compares informal construction contract values for those same years. So you could see the different categories. So total informal under $75,000 during year 2022, it was 72.9%. In 23, it was 70.4%. 24, 58.7%. And in 5 months of 25, it was 60%. Now, these are the ones that we form through the purchasing, we award through the purchasing agent authorization. The ones that are coming to your board in 2022, there were none over. These are the contracts between $75,000 and $220,000. And then in 23, 40.5% went to local contractors. 24, 47.6% went to local contractors. And in 2025, it was $129,000, all of which went to local contractor. Note that these informal thresholds for years 22, 23, and 24 were $60,000 and $200,000, and now they're $75,000 and $220,000. That's my report.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Marquez, do you have any questions or comments?
Yes, just a few. Thank you for the excellent data and tracking. It's very impressive. I had a couple questions, but throughout your presentation, you ended up answering most of them, so I appreciate that. But with respect to the contracts under $75,000, would you say the spread, just, I know you don't have the numbers here, but is it likely that they match what's being done over $75,000, where strong emphasis is on local contractors?
The smaller contracts tend to go more to the local contractors than the larger contracts.
Okay.
As you can see in the chart on page, I don't have my slide numbers, but where it says informal construction local award amount, and it shows a 75 and 220, it's the last slide.
Got it. I see it there now.
Yeah. Okay. You can see that in general, the smaller contracts go more to local contractors, which has been a big objective of the board, is to target small contractors who are not getting a lot of business.
Okay.
These procurements are much faster to get out than having to put the bid, bring it to the board. It takes a long time, and they tend to be a little less complicated.
Okay. And then if at all possible, I would be interested in kind of the blurb that you send out to the local chambers. If I don't want to speak for Supervisor Miley, but we distribute a monthly newsletter at the end of every month, but I would love to put that link and promote this. I think that's very positive and want to make sure we're doing our part to communicate to the public that this is an opportunity as well. So if you don't mind just adding us to your distribution list or sending us something specific that we can help promote for those outreach efforts in our own newsletter and social media.
Thank you. Appreciate
Thank
that.
You.
Okay. Yes, thanks for the presentation. And let's see. The slide that has the following compares the informal construction contracts.
I think it's the last slide.
It's the second to the last slide. Okay. The one before that? The one before that. Yeah, that one. So the total number of construction contracts at the bottom, that includes local and non-local?
Correct.
Okay. And then if I were to match the dollar amount for 2022, is it 1.1 million? 2023, 4.3 million, 2024, 5.1 million, and is that?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's, let me just write those, so that's 429, that's 4368, that's for 364. That's for 96, okay. So So the greater percentage is going to local when you combine it all?
That's correct.
Is there any kind of analysis around the contracts that are over 75,000 to 220,000 wide, skewed more towards non-local versus local?
I'm sure we have the information by job, so we can get that for you.
Yeah, because I do like the fact, as you pointed out, we want to get more local bidding, and overall that is, you know, that is definitely taking the being indicated here. I just wanted to kind of, before I spoke, make sure I was on track here. Just want to try to see how, if there's any rationale behind the
I could speculate, but I think it'd be good for us to bring it forward. My guess is it's because we targeted small contracts through this process of informal construction, and with the qualified contractors list, having to travel may be a big factor in that they will tend to bid on larger projects. But I will confirm.
And you don't have to bring it back immediately, but this report, how often do you plan on providing us with this report?
It would make sense to me, since it's an annual qualified list, for us to bring it once a year to your committee.
Okay. Yeah, it'd be helpful if we could kind of understand more about that.
We can also total the dollar values, so because I see you doing that in your head.
Yeah. Okay. And this is just for construction?
That's correct. This is our building maintenance department procures construction in our facilities, county-owned facilities.
Okay. So I don't have any other questions other than if there are any staff through your analysis and work on this, if there's any improvements that can be made, any lessons learned, anything to enhance this, please feel
yes, certainly
open to bringing that to us.
Certainly.
Yeah. Okay, let's see if there's any public speakers on this item.
I have no speakers for item one.
All right, thank you. Okay. We will now go to item two, Project Stabilization Community Benefit Agreement update.
Thank you, Supervisors. Again, Kimberly Gassway, Director of General Services Agency. This is our Project Stabilization Community Benefits Agreement update. And she's pulling up the slides. So just to give you some history, I'm sure Supervisor Miley knows most of this, but in July 2012, the Board of Supervisors adopted the Project Stabilization Community Benefits Agreement, better known as the PSCBA, with the Alameda County Building Trades Council. First project was the East County Hall of Justice initiated this, and the objective was to employ disadvantaged resident workers. In June 2013, the board adopted a county-wide PSCBA for a term of 3 years. The PSCBA was extended by 2 years through June 2018, and in October 2020, a new 5-year agreement was negotiated and approved by the Board of Supervisors. It has an automatic renewal of 5 years, and that will happen this October. The purpose of the PSCBA was the county desired to provide enhanced, encourage construction training and employment opportunities for Alameda County residents and small business enterprises through apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship programs. The county also desired, this was straight out of the resolution, also desired to use the agreement as a vehicle for building the capacity of county residents and businesses to maximize their potential to successfully participate in other large-scale projects. The parties, that was the Building Trades Commission, as well as the county, recognized the need for safe, efficient, and speedy construction to reduce unnecessary delays for timely completion of the projects. and they desire to mutually establish and stabilize wages, hours, and other working conditions for the contractor's employees on these projects. Next slide. Goals were established in the agreement, which included a minimum of 40% labor hours shall be performed by Alameda County residents. And you know, we report these goals out to your committee on a regular basis. 20% of the hours performed are to be performed by apprentices. This is also a state requirement. And 40% of apprentice labor hours shall be worked by disadvantaged resident workers, defined as Alameda County residents that are unemployed at the start of construction. The project thresholds. Trades work on any public works agency projects that are valued at $3 million or more. The PSCBA applies to those. Trucking services for public works valued at $1 million or more. All other county construction projects, generally by GSA, that are valued at $1 million or more. And all trades work on county construction work with a value of $1 million or more. Effective October 6, 2025, when the agreement renews, the side letter for public works for projects valued at $3 million or more will expire, and the requirement will become $1 million or more for public works agency projects, the same as GSA projects. The current achievements, as there have been 384,000 plus applicable labor hours worked on county projects under the current agreement. And the achievements as of June 30th, 2025 include the 49% of the hours have been performed by Alameda County residents, or 40% with the 40% goal. So they've exceeded that. 17% of the hours have been performed by apprentices. 20% is the state requirement. I'll speak more to that in a minute as far as what we're doing to get closer to that goal, and 38% of apprentice hours have been performed by disadvantaged resident apprentices with a goal of 40%. In order to look at these and evaluate the agreement as well as how contractors are doing on the job, a joint advisory committee was established. It's comprised of two representatives selected by the Building Trades Council, two representatives selected by the county, those are GSA staff persons in our Office of Acquisition Policy, and one community represented, which is, she's retired from the Tradeswoman Incorporated. The JAC meets monthly. They review work progress and practices on current and upcoming covered projects, as well as resident and disadvantaged resident utilization, pre-apprentice recruitment, training and referrals, and apprentice development and utilization. They find that contractors are not meeting the goals or objectives that are outlined in their contracts. They're put on notice for a corrective measure in order to bring that project into compliance. Additionally, the JAC considers and resolves any grievances that are filed on projects by union members. That's the report.
So, Ms. Marquez? Yes.
Thank you. I really appreciate your presentation and your slides. It's always very clear and concise, so thank you for that. Mm-hmm. With respect to the JAC, the Joint Administrative Committee, since they meet monthly and we are very, very close to meeting the goals of 20% of the state requirement of the work performed by apprentices, we're currently at 17%. And then we're at 38% with the goal being 40% of the work being performed by disadvantaged residents. So I'm just going to presume, since you meet monthly, that this data is tracked and there's discussion and like we're very close, but we're not there. So can you give me a sense of what is being done to ensure that we are in compliance with these goals?
Sure. So first of all, they will meet, so they look at every single project that's in construction and any that are following behind. The contractor has to attend the meeting, explain what is happening, and how they're going to work to achieve the goals. The last one that was this happened was the Dublin Transit Center. They were having some challenge with local hires on that project, and we didn't accept a lot of their reasons. One of the things they can do, though, that particular company did, is they can look at projects that may not be a county project, but then they can hire local Alameda County residents to work on those out of the union hall. So they can report back to the JAC of how they're doing that and prove that they are where they may not be meeting the goal on our particular project, they are enhancing work availability for local residents, disadvantaged residents.
Will that qualify or count for our data, or is it like a supplemental? Okay, it does not.
But we do track that and sure. So it could be like a neighboring county nearby, Contra Costa. So they, because sometimes an apprentice may be on one of our jobs that may or may not be close to ending, and so making sure they have can get on another job.
Okay, and then did I understand correctly that starting in October, the threshold for public works projects is going to be reduced to $1 million instead of $3 million?
That's correct.
Okay.
They had a side letter, and they presented to the committee of why they thought that should continue. Daniel, I don't know if he's on the call, but essentially they are going to be in the same threshold. $1 million.
And does that come back to us for board action in October? Is it a resolution?
No, it does not. It's automatically.
It's automatic.
It says that in the contract.
Okay.
It's renewed.
Okay.
I mean, in the agreement. Yep.
Great. I think this is very positive and another great work and success stories that we should definitely be highlighting. Keeping people employed in our community is really important. So thank you.
Especially in building trades where building capacity in the community is important. So.
Yeah, just for an aside, this is something Supervisor Wilma Chan worked very closely with me on. So back on the goals not being met, so I heard the response, Supervisor Marquez, so we shouldn't be concerned about the fact that we're apprentice hours and the disadvantaged resident. We haven't quite met those goals. There are legitimate
right, those
excuses.
Correct. And we do bring regularly that report to your board, Public Works and GSA, on how we're doing on each individual project. There's also, in addition to what I shared with her, where there be corrective measures or they may have people working on other jobs. In addition to that, there's certain trades, such as elevator construction, that cannot, they're very strict on who can and can't work on those. So we do look at all the reasons, but I can bring a little more detail when we bring the report by project to you to give some explanation on certain projects and what is happening.
Okay. And the 384,249 labor hours, that's over the course of 2 years, 3 years, 5 years?
I believe it's since the agreement was in effect.
Oh, really? Since the agreement
confirm. I left my phone over there. Someone's probably messaging me that answer.
2012? Goes back that far?
Let me grab that.
The board adopted it 2013.
Doug Bond, or somebody is answering. It may just be for the year, so here we go. Here we go. It is 5 years. It's now at 419,000 hours, and it's since 2020.
Okay, so since 2020, and it's how many hours?
She said it's just now been updated to over 400,000.
Over 400,000 since 2020.
Okay. And as of last week, we were at 50% for locals. So they're like tracking it every week. I don't want to change the numbers for you.
Mm-hmm.
She did say also, I'm sorry, it's Julie Ackerman, our contract compliance officer who sits on the JAC. She said they do get offsite credits for our projects. Yes.
Can I ask a quick follow-up question while you're looking your notes? Has the membership of the JAC been consistent? Like if there's a vacancy, we fill it?
So the building trades select their who participates. There's three members. They rotate.
Okay.
Our Office of Acquisition Policy, we have the supervisor and one of the contract compliance officers participates. There's been different people as those positions have changed. I mean, the people in those positions have changed. I believe Meriwether and Williams also has a person on there as well as someone from the trade. So I think those two community positions can rotate.
Okay.
And do we know, so it's just looking at the purpose, and I think the only bullet I'm not quite clear on, if we've achieved, if we know anything about it, is bullet number two. If we wanted this agreement as a vehicle for building the capacity of county residents and businesses to maximize their potential to successfully participate in other large-scale projects. Do we know anecdotally if any of that's happening or anything?
I'm not sure that that's happening. It's typically the same. If it's a very large project, it's typically very large general contractors. The subs may be getting more capacity on their own, but whether or not they then turn around and move to large projects,
you just don't know.
I will ask, but it's my sense that they maintain as a sub status, subcontractors.
And I guess the only other question I would have, with the percentages, do we know, like 49%, 17%, and 38%, do we know what that equates to in terms of actual personnel or actual people?
I would be able to tell you the number of hours, but the number of persons, let me ask staff if I can get that for you.
Okay. Just curious. Okay. All right.
And I do have several people listening, so they're writing down all these, make sure we can get you this information.
Well, it's just great we have this in place. And once again, it's working, but if the staff and the JAC see any areas of improvement, lessons learned, anything we can do to even enhance it, just feel free to bring that back to us.
We'll ask them for that feedback if they have some formal recommendations.
I just want to say this is really impressive, and I feel strongly that nothing gets done without a framework and tracking, and you're proving that. So you guys, this is extremely impressive to see the amount of investment and investing in our local community members and putting them to work. And I think if that was something that was a meeting quarterly or biannually, obviously we wouldn't be able to demonstrate the significant work. So just kudos for everyone being willing to meet monthly. I know that could be painful with everything else going on, another commitment, but it demonstrates that it's effective and it's paying off. So thank you.
Thank you. The committee takes it very seriously and do hold contractors accountable.
So let's see if we have any public speakers on this item.
I have no speakers for item two.
No speakers, okay, thank you. All righty, moving right along. Number three, the Auditor Comptroller's Quarterly Procurement Report.
Hi, Supervisor Miley. Supervisor Marquez, this is Lloyd Boyd from the Auditor Comptroller Clerk Recorder's Office, and I'm also joined by Susan Waywitz, our Assistant Recorder, Assistant Clerk Recorder. And I will be providing today's update. So I want to draw your attention. Tisa, can you put up the report? And Tisa, do you only have the first page, or do you have access to the full report that's posted online?
I have access to the full report.
Okay. So this information reflects payments through March 31st, 2025. And the bullet points that I will go over that are on the first page are cumulative through from 2009 to March 2025. But later in the report, we will get to more recent data. So the first bullet point is total payments up to $500,000 was $2.3 billion. Now this $500,000, it is payments up to $500,000 The total payments were $5.17 billion. So what I'm talking about in the first section are payments only up to $5,000, which is the $2.3 billion, and that represents 45% of the total payments. So specifically of those payments up to $500,000, 58.8% or $1.36 billion was paid to local contractors. 48.8% or $1.13 billion was paid to MWBE slab contractors. And that fourth bullet there kind of breaks it down in categories by MWBE slab contractors. 39% of construction dollars went to slabs. 54% of A&E dollars went to slabs. 58.8% of professional services dollars went to slabs. And about 45% of slab dollars went in the area of goods and services. So the second section of this report, the bottom part, speaks to payments, cumulative payments, so not just payments under $500,000. So again, total payments was $5.17 billion. Of that amount, about 53% or $2.7 billion was paid to local contractors. About 35% was paid to MWBE slab contractors. And about 35%, excuse me, 52% went to local contractors. About 35% went to MWBE slab contractors. And then broken down by category for MWBE slab is 28% for construction dollars, about 46% for A&E dollars. Of A&E dollars went to slabs, 31.6% or $622 million went to slabs in the area of professional services. And in goods and services, about 42% of those dollars went to slabs, or $867 million. And again, these are cumulative, and I want to draw your attention. He said, if you can go down to section E as in elephant, all the way towards the bottom of the report. Yep, keep going. Yes, so in section E, this is where you will get your more current breakdown. Get there myself. So this is where, again, up to $500,000 payments, you have it broken down by fiscal year 23-24 and the first three quarters of fiscal year 24-25. And if you keep going to E2, that gives you the breakdown by area. And I want to keep going, keep going down to F as in Frank. Next, the next one. So there were some questions about this chart in the last meeting. So this represents total payments, total local payments. And as you can see, we have had an increase in local payments over the last few fiscal years. However, we're still, you know, outpaced by non-local, but this gives you a visual of how we have performed since fiscal year 10. That kind of gives you a trend. But I do want to point out, if you go down to the next chart, he's on the next page, you can see local for goods and services we're doing extremely well there. So most of our local dollars for goods and services, most of those dollars are staying right here. It's what we need to do better on our construction professional services and A&E dollars, but we did want to highlight the local goods and service dollars. And I will take any questions that you have. And after questions, I can turn it over to Susan Waywisser, who can talk a little bit about some of the initiatives of her unit to make sure that we are out engaging with our local vendors.
Okay, Supervisor Marquez.
Thank you so much, Laura, for the great presentation. It's very clear. Love the visuals. Yes, just wanted to hear what you attribute the success to in the increased investment in goods and services by our local vendors. If you could just share with us how we got to that point. I'm glad we're here. More to do in other areas, but just wanted to hear the takeaways.
I think a lot of it, again, has to do with those smaller contracts where we have our board's initiative that, you know, those contracts, $25,000 and less, you know, need to go to SLEBs. And so they're utilizing our SLEB database. They're finding local vendors to perform those services. So I attribute that. And then a lot of the COVID dollars have gone away. And a lot of those dollars were going non-local. Because we had to, you know, get them out fast, and they went to a lot of larger companies. So I think that those two factors are major contributors to how well we're doing in the local arena. And then Susan Wayreser, she can talk about some of the enhancements that are being made to the SLEB database so that not only employees, but, you know, community members can go to the database and find local vendors a lot easier than they could just a couple months ago. So quite a few smaller things and some larger things, I think, are contributing to that nice performance in goods and services.
Thank you.
So you might not be able to answer this question, Laura, but I know we've asked Melissa in the past. At some point, we're going to make a change to the reporting time frame. So
yeah.
What and what's delaying us in doing that? Are we still waiting for the disparity study? What's delaying us, you know, making a change? Because, you know, so, go ahead.
Yeah, Melissa has said at multiple meetings that a change in this report was going to be tied directly to the disparity study, and we are still waiting on council's review of the disparity study. So once that's done, I mean, we're kind of looking at different models internally on what the reimagined report will look like, taking feedback that you and Supervisor Marquez and people on this committee prior to her have given about like how we should present this data. Mm-hmm. So we do have some ideas in mind, but our goal was to tie it directly to the disparity study.
Yes, Council. Kathy, do you know anything about where we are with the disparity study, because it's in County Council?
This is Kathy Liam.
Oh, Kathy, I'm sorry.
County Council, and I don't have an update for you.
What is our next meeting, September or October? September? Because I definitely want to agendize an update on the disparity study for our next meeting, because I know it's been in County Council for months. And hopefully, and I know council's been busy with a lot of stuff, but we've got to get this done now, because I think it's been languishing there for quite a bit of time. So I want to agendize it for our next meeting. And then on page 12 of the report, Laura, payments by geographic area. Most of the payments are in Oakland, but do we know what this would look like if we did it by supervisorial district?
That is not included in this report, and I'm not sure if our system would allow us to
break it out.
Do
like
it
that.
By, yeah. I think it's specific to the city that is associated with the address the vendor has on file, but I don't know. Maybe we're more advanced than I think. Susan, do you think we could narrow it down?
I think it would be challenging at best. You're right. Our financial system classifies things by zip code and by city. So to that extent, somewhat, but I think there's some division on those. We could certainly take a look and see what we could come up with.
Just curious to kind of see it by supervisor district, but if it's too challenging, just a question at the moment. And I know when we maybe make some alterations to the reporting, once we get the disparity study to us and to the full board, maybe that might be something we'll want to do prospectively.
We can also look into it.
Okay. And I think those are all my questions. So, Susan, you were going to add to this report?
Yeah, hi, Jess. Good afternoon, Supervisor Susan Waywitzer from Auditor Controller's Office. I just want to kind of, as it relates to our local businesses, as you know or may not know, the SLUB certification unit is housed within the Auditor Controller's office, and we have been working with the ITD to streamline and automate the SLUB certification process to make it easier and more efficient and sustainable. Just last week, we announced and launched a new fully online process. This is still using the EBIA Shared Common Application, but we now have a pre-qualification component as well as ability to pre-populate fields on the application. Using the system allows applicants to actually start and stop an application online. And they'll get a pop-up saying, you know, we see you started this, and they'll send them a link that they'll be able to go back and finish it within 45 days. It will also automatically update the SLEB database that's posted on our website upon approval of the applications. This project actually is a result of the 2024 Rethink ITD's event that they held, and our team won the Best of the Best award. And so we have been, like I say, since then working with ITD. Phase two will include updating the overall SLEB website pages, automatically issuing the certification letters upon, you know, authorization of those new SLEB applicant certifications or recertifications, and hopefully interfacing the SLEB database with the AlcoLink financial supplier database. That's something we've been working on for decades, I think, at this point now. As of this morning, we just launched this last week. I think it was Friday. And as of, you know, first thing this morning, we had over 15 applications that had already been submitted. So, and to help share, we did send out notifications. We noticed all of the county departments, obviously let them know, as well as sent out information to our suppliers in the SLEB database and eGov, and as I said, the departments as well. We will also be sharing information tomorrow, beginning tomorrow morning. We're going to, along with the GSA, co-host the first EBIA, that's the East Bay Interagency Alliance Certification and Contracting Opportunities event since COVID. The first one will be tomorrow from 9 to 11 at the Oakland Airport, and then we'll do it again next week down the street at AC Transportation from 4 to 6. The EBIA members, that's the City of Oakland, the Port of Oakland, AC Transportation, and the County, of course, will each have an opportunity to present their certification process and information about our small business programs, as well as contracting opportunities. And then we will also be able to meet with the applicants, or the attendees rather, one-on-one at our tables. And as of this morning, I believe we had about 80 registrants for the event tomorrow. And as I mentioned, this is the first public in-person event that, you know, we've had since actually well before COVID. So we're excited to see how that goes, and then hopefully look forward to hosting future events within the county for that small business community.
Supervisor Marquez, yes.
Thank you. Thank you for these updates. It's exciting to hear improving processes and streamlining it, making it more user-friendly. Not sure if my question is aligned 100% with what you're doing, but it may relate. I did receive a concern recently with regard to, I think it was more on a contract bid, but I think it relates because it had to do with inputting information to a system application process. So what you're describing, if there's a document or something that's missing, I understand that you can start and stop the application. But is it also like a checks and balance, ensuring that all proper documentation has been submitted? Does it have the ability to analyze that and provide that feedback to the end user?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. That was related to an appeal we recently had. In this process, but yes, there's only one document. That's kind of the beauty of it. It's an online DocuSign application document. It helps you, it lets you know if it's not filled out correctly. It'll tell you what spaces, what information is missing, what is required. And once it is submitted, the applicant will get an email confirming its receipt with a date and a time. If they have questions, you know, they could give us a call. And as I mentioned, if they start a pre-qual and or application process and get called away or just can't finish it, they're going to get a pop-up saying, we're going to send you an email with a link. Make sure you check it. They can check their email. That link will take them right back to where they left off, and it will be valid for 45 days. We also will have access to that information. So if we see that there's some of those that are kind of in the queue started and not stopped, we'll be able to reach out and follow up with them to see if they need some assistance in submitting an application for certification.
Okay, but if that's missed for whatever reason, if there's no contact made with the individual after 45 days, it would really be up to them to restart the application.
They will get a notification that says yes, that you know this is now stale, you know, dated, and to please start a new application when they're ready.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, I just want to give the auditor, comptroller, recorder a big hearty congratulations. That sounds great that we are advancing into the 21st century. I don't know if other county agencies or departments need to make a note of this, because basically what you described, Supervisor Marquez, and what you've said to the committee, I think is really fantastic in terms of the technology, because I know we often see this when we use, we have to, you know, go to other entities, non-county, to do something online that, you know, it's, you know, they have these functions that allow for this. So this is really great. So in addition, when we talk about the SLEP certification, are we talking about the supplier pool that's in the report?
Of 11,000,
almost 12,000, is that the SLEP database you're referring to?
The supplier pool are all of the suppliers in the AlcoLink financial system. The SLEPs are the first column. And at this point, at this time in the report, there was 896, but we've actually increased that and are well over 900. I believe it's about 930 or 40 at this time.
940, okay.
Can't get you that exact amount. We are seeing an increase in our applications.
Great, because of this new technology?
Not sure, yeah. I don't know. We don't know yet if that's the reason. But we're going to be monitoring it and, you know, seeing if we can make those kind of determinations. We'll probably send out some surveys maybe.
Okay.
And Supervisor, I'll add that on page G, as in giraffe, G1, it gives you a breakdown of the supplier pool as of
March 31st,
and then that gives you the breakdown by race.
Can you repeat that? You said G1?
The page is G, giraffe, G1.
Oh, yes. That's what I'm on. Okay.
I just wanted to point out that's where a breakdown of the supplier pool is.
Right. Okay. Got it. Okay.
Okay.
And then it was really pleasing to hear that the East Bay Interagency Alliance, you're going to be holding a meeting in this event after so many years of not meeting, because I was going to ask you about with this new technology that you're utilizing of how's it going to work for reciprocity? And I guess if you're going to the interagency, the East Bay Interagency Alliance, that's where the reciprocity potentially could occur.
Right. It's not true reciprocity. Just because you're certified at one, you don't get certified at another. But what we do is we share a common application, and we continue to do that. All of the agencies sort of have their own internal process for certification. Some of them are online, some aren't. Ours is exactly the EBIA shared application. One of the first questions asked when they go to pre-qual is, do you want to have this application go to any of these other, our other shared agencies? Mm-hmm. So we still, you know, do that. And we have been meeting with them, or attempting to meet, since about 2023. We kind of started up and hit or miss, and some would show up. And so Ernestine from the city of Oakland was still there at that time. It kind of fell off a little bit. They got picked back up again. The AC Transportation was really pushing it. And so we've been meeting fairly regularly now for at least a year or so, and we decided it's time to, you know, take the show on the road. So,
oh, that's great. Now, it's AC Transit, ACTC, BART, the City of Oakland, and the county?
And the port.
And the port. Great. Yep. Great.
Yep. We're all working on it, and all new faces.
All new faces.
Yeah, he's been around a long, long time. And yeah, it's all new faces now.
Oh, yeah, because how long have you been with the auditor's office, Susan?
Well, I've been with the auditor's office since 2008, but I was with GSA before okay. then, since 95.
Oh, since
so
when?
It's a long time.
Since when?
95. It'll be 30 years this year.
Okay, okay. Yeah, because the East Bay Interagency Alliance, you know, and GSA, Linda Moore, I believe, that I used to head all that up. And, you know, we started all that with the port, the city of Oakland, county, et cetera, long time ago. So I'm really pleased to see that it's still functioning and we have that continuity around all these major governmental entities working together to provide services to, you know, the celeb community and other, I want to say MBA, WBA, but the point is our local vendor community.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is really great.
That's why we wanted to make sure to share that with you. So I feel like you're the one that started this. And yeah, in fact, the EBIA website, that's something I'm talking to the port with about updating, still includes Linda Moore's name and Kamika as the contact.
Oh, really? That needs to be changed. Linda's been retired for a while.
It's a county website, and I'm trying to work with the port to see if they would maybe like to host it, since they've been taking the lead on it. So we're working on that, and we'll be definitely getting.
Please follow up. I think that's something that's kind of fallen through the cracks here, because Linda's been retired for a long time, and Kamika.
Long time.
It's my, you know, Kamika was my chief of staff. She hasn't been with me for. I don't even remember how long. Yeah.
Decades, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, please get that handled.
Yep.
That's great. And you said this event will be tomorrow at what time?
But tomorrow is the first one, and I can forward you guys a flyer. We'd love to have you there if you're free and available. It's a board meeting tomorrow, but it's from 9 to 11 tomorrow at the airport.
Okay.
And then the following Tuesday, the 29th, we'll host another event at the AC Transportation facility down this street in Oakland here. And that one will be from 4 to 6. So we're doing one in the morning and one in the evening.
Can you forward Supervisor Marquez and myself the flyers? I know tomorrow, I know we won't be able to come in person because we got a pretty lengthy board meeting tomorrow. But at least we'll have the information. And maybe I might be able to get one of my staff to attend for me, but because, like you said, East Bay Interagency Alliance, I want to consider it my baby, but that goes back a long way. And so really just when you brought that up, I was like, wow, this is wonderful.
That's why we wanted to be sure to share this with you, to let you know, but it's still going on. So thank you for all your hard work on that.
Okay. So let's see if we have any speakers on this item.
I have no speakers on item 3.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And we're going to have County Council bring the disparity study to us at our September meeting because we're agendizing that. Okay. And our last item for today is Alameda County Health Contracts Update. Okay.
Crystal, can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
So good afternoon, Supervisor Miley, Supervisor Marquez. My name is Christelle Ocasio. I'm the Financial Services Director for Alameda County Health, and we'll be providing our annual contracts update today. And last time we were at the committee, I believe it was exactly a year ago. Next slide, please. So this is now AC Health's fourth time to present to the committee. Since our first presentation in July 2022, we've iterated on the information we've been able to report to the committee, adding different dimensions to the report. So at our last presentation, we provided contracts data on both CBO and non-CBO contracts, as well as the SLEB status of all contractors. That information, last time we were here, was based on fiscal year 22-23 actual expenditures. And so today I'll be able to provide an update on the 23-24 actual expenditures, picking up basically where we left. But first, and this is new for us as well, so this is the new iteration for the current report, we will be able to show CBO contracts budget information, and that's for the current year 25-26, by supervisorial district and by city. We'll also be able to, for the first time, provide an estimate to the committee as to the number of full-time equivalents that our CBO contracts budget is projected to fund. Next slide, please. We can skip this one. So here is the overview of AC Health's CBO contracts budget for fiscal 25-26. And what we can see is for the current year, we've included over $758 million to fund approximately 360 CBO contracts. I would say that this number of contracts is a conservative count of what we'll be executing, since there's still amounts to be allocated within that 758 or 759 million. And so once those vendors are specified and the contract numbers are confirmed, then these would potentially shift. This budget that is going to CBO contracts represents an increase of $83 million from the prior year. And then we're projecting to increase the number of contracts by at least 23. This does not include PO roles, so meaning contracts that may have been started from a prior year that are still continuing this year. And it also doesn't include other types of contracts that AC Health may have included in our MOE budget, such as, professional services or other services that are in standard services agreements. But I do also want to note that the CBO contracts budget is, very significant for our agency. It represents 58% of our total, now over $1.3 billion. Next slide, please. So here's just a breakout by department, and apologies, the M for millions of dollars is missing next to the budgeted amounts by department. But just wanted to kind of remind the committee as to, how the budgets basically break down across our agency. So just as the total, overall budget is for our agency, behavioral health does take the lion's share in terms of amount budgeted for CBO contracts. So what you can see here is almost 72% for $545 million are under the Behavioral Health Department for CBO contracts, followed by the Office of the Agency Director at 26% or $199 million, and then Public Health, $15.5 million, or about 2%. Behavioral Health is the administrator of mental health and substance use services under Medicaid, so that's, you know, what helps to explain the large share of CBO providers in that department. And then for OAD, critical services such as housing, homelessness, EMS, and indigent health, those contracts are included in that department. And then Public Health has significant responsibility over areas such as communicable disease control and prevention and chronic disease control and prevention, among other key public health services that promote so next slide, please. So a couple of caveats to this slide, but this is where we have been able to now do the breakout of planned CBO contracts, you know, for the current year by supervisorial district. One thing that I want to draw attention to the committee, as well as those who are, you know, watching the presentation, is that the budget and amount that we're discussing here is just a proportion of the overall budget that we talked about just a second ago at $758 million. This is the amount that's been allocated within Alameda County. So we are excluding amounts just from this chart for those that are not yet known in terms of the vendor, or the vendor is known, but they're outside of the county. And we really wanted to do this to really understand, you know, this idea of investing locally. Now, to get at the district breakout, what we used was headquarter location. And so this is not a perfect measure of, you know, impact to the districts, because it doesn't include, for example, you know, satellite locations that might belong to a particular CBO. So I would say that, again, this is a proxy for impact to the districts. But what we can see is that, and one more thing I do want to say is that also this doesn't indicate where the services are actually being provided. And so, you know, we have been trying to take a look at how to, you know, shore up the data around that particular ask. It is challenging, I would have to say, to standardize, you know, multi-millions of dollars in terms of contracts and invoices to accomplish that. So again, this is where we have for the time being settled on headquarter location. So what's being represented here is a total of $654 million of CBO contracts. And we can see that, you know, the largest sort of slice of the pie is located within District 3, 45% or $293 million. For context, you know, one of the biggest drivers of the allocation within that geographic area is Alameda Health System. So total amount of planned contracts, you know, for Alameda Health System alone is approximately $134 million, again, across different types of contracts. One of the other biggest, you know, or big providers that's headquartered within that district is Telecor, and their contracts amounts to $73 million. And then among other allocations. The next slice of the pie is for District 5, $209 million or 32%. Some of the big providers within that district are Children's Hospital, for example, at around $20 million, and then Bay Area Community Services at $47 million. District 2 is approximately 9% or almost $57 million of our CBO contracts budget. and located within the district is the headquarters of Verizon Services. Total contract values at around $14 million, and the Alliance for Community Wellness is $11 million. In District 4, we have approximately $53 million going to CDO's headquarters in that location, or 8% of the overall. Some of the big contracts there are for Pathways to Wellness at about $10.5 million. And then Seneca Center for 18.5. And then finally, we do have $42 million or 6% going to CBO providers headquartered in District 1. And some of the major providers there are Load Services, approximately $23 million, among others, such as like Washington Hospital, the City of Pittsburgh. So, please. So again, using a headquarter location of CBOs, this chart shifts from a supervisorial district to the breakout by city in Alameda County. Again, we are excluding amounts that are yet to be allocated and also those CBOs outside. Do want to remind that because we're not including satellite offices, and if we were to kind of be a little bit more accurate about that, that the city perspective is likely to shift. But again, if we base on headquarters, we see that, you know, the majority of CBO providers in terms of budget are located in the city of Oakland. So 59% of the overall CBO contracts budget is located within that city, or $380 million, followed by Alameda at $85 million, or 13%. Berkeley has 9% at 59%, and Hayward has about 8%. Thank you. So shifting to, you know, one economic indicator is the number of FTEs that we are projecting for our CBO contract providers to include in their agreements for the current year. So what we did here was we worked with our three departments to estimate the number of FTEs that we anticipate or we could identify as, you know, being funded for the current year. What I will say is that even though it appears like these are whole numbers, so we're projecting a total of over 4,300 FTEs to be funded with our CBO contracts, in the majority of our contracts, we're including, you know, not just full-time FTE, but for many of them, these are just partial. So it is the aggregate of both full-time and partial FTE. But having said that, what we're projecting is that about $530 million, that's the contract value over 436 contracts, is anticipated to, you know, provide funding for 4,303 FTEs. Now, that appears to be a precise number, but again, these are just projections. And it also doesn't necessarily speak to the issue of actually being able to fill positions, which, as we know, has been difficult, you know, across our safety net and our nonprofit groups. That is what we are able to kind of show to the committee.
Before you go to the next section, I don't know if Supervisor Marquez has any questions or comments, but I just, first of all, I want to congratulate the Alameda County Health for getting us this data, something I've been requesting for a while, so I appreciate the improvements with the report. And so I just want to acknowledge that. But the one question I have at the moment is the on this slide, it says approximate number of contracts funding FTEs, 436. And then when you look at the slide, an earlier slide, it said Alameda County Health fiscal year 25-26 MOU CBO contract budget. And the number of contracts for the proposed budget was 368. So I'm trying to understand, how do we get 436 here for the fiscal year, but earlier on it was 368? Chris, is this Crystal who's on the line making the presentation? Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, do you see what I'm referring to? There's an earlier slide.
Yes, absolutely. And so appreciate the question because I do want to provide more context. So these were the contracts that we could identify at this juncture that were to include FTEs. So I had mentioned earlier, there are still amounts to be allocated this fiscal year and or contracts that are still to be negotiated. And so that also explains like some of the balance of that, you know, the difference between those two numbers. And once those contracts are negotiated and amounts allocated, this may help to boost this particular projection. And then I would say that there are also contracts that may not necessarily fund FTEs. And so that's also, you know, part of the reason why there's maybe a variance between the numbers.
There. Okay, because one number is 368 for the fiscal year 25-26, and then this number. Number is 436.
It's a bigger number.
Yeah, it's a bigger number.
Yeah, it's a bigger number. Yeah,
which is, I mean, it's great. I'm just trying to make sure we have an explanation about the two numbers.
No, you're right. I was sorry. I was assuming that the other number was much smaller. Yeah, I'm not sure. I have to go back to staff to see
okay. where we got the report. No problem. We'll flag that for you.
Sorry.
And then I just want to say this is really great. This information that you're providing that shows, you know, $530 million of contract value, maybe 436 contracts, 4,300 full-time employees. I mean, that's pretty significant. Yeah. So I just want to acknowledge this, but if there's any tweaking that needs to be done to make sure everything, the data is accurate and correct, please be mindful of that. Supervisor Marquez, do you have any comments thus far or questions?
No, just thank you for flagging that. I know we'll get updated information. But Crystal, just thank you for the tremendous work. This is impressive. And just want to publicly thank you for all of the tremendous work you did around saving St. Rose Hospital. You were instrumental in that. So just wanted to thank you for that.
Good. All right. You can continue.
Oh, I do also, and I should have said it earlier, want to make a shout out to ITB. We worked with them to be able to do the mapping by city and district. And so, you know, without their help in terms of that, we wouldn't have been able to do that right now. So just want to acknowledge the ITB for their support.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because when that one slide that shows by city, and once again, it's headquartered, but in Oakland, almost $389 million, 60% of the contracts that the county through healthcare provides, those providers are headquartered in Oakland. So I know there was a meeting to kind of talk about the resources that the county's putting in Oakland. I don't know if the agency director utilized any of this data, but maybe she did when she met with city officials, because I think that happened today.
Yes, I believe the interim agency director may have included this. I know I provided it. All right. So this next segment of the report basically follows up on, you know, what we've done with the committee in fire presentations. So next slide, please. One of the areas that we consistently have reported on are the number of RFPs that our agency has conducted in the last bit of time. So this information is cumulative between January 2022 to September 2024. So it's just a little bit past the fiscal year 23-24. Time period that we're reporting on. And it, again, it's cumulative. So what we can see here is that over this time period, AC Health has conducted 95% of its own formal RFPs, and we've partnered with GSA for the remaining 5%. And we're enabled to do our own procurements because we do work, you know, very closely with GSA Office of Acquisition Policy to understand GSA standards for procurement. And then also, you know, as you all know, do have some non-standard procurements that have been board approved that we have conducted, you know, on behalf of the agency. So we do have specialized teams who are often dedicated to doing this type of procurement work. Again, so that we can get as many RFPs out that, you know, generally involve our CBU programs. Next slide, please. So just to ground us a little bit as to, you know, what is being communicated in these slides. So unlike the prior set of slides where we're really talking about amounts at the budget level, for these next set of slides, what we're talking about are 23-24 actuals. So these are the amounts that had been expended by our agency during that fiscal year. Similar to the other budget slides, we see that, you know, the majority of expenditures for this year are under the Behavioral Health Department at 73%, followed by OED at 24%. Public health at 3%. Our environmental health department has a share in terms of contract expenditures in this particular segment because we're talking about more than just CBO contracts. We're talking about those plus our standard services agreement. So again, for this fiscal year, what we're showing in terms of actual expenditures is over 700. This segment of the report, again, unlike the prior segment, goes over not just CBO contracts, but also standard services agreements with some breakout in terms of professional services or other services. The difference between, if we could go back to the next slide, I mean, the prior slide, but just one of the markers between the two contract types is the CBO master contract is typically renewed on an annual basis and is predicated upon ongoing or permanent funding. And the reason why it's renewed on an annual basis is to prevent disruption of services to the community. Standard services agreement, on the other hand, are time limited and term limited in nature, and that's due either to the type of funding that is being provided, which is time limited or with time, or because the services under the standard services agreement is not recited. So that looks like these. Here are just some examples of what we would contract out under professional services versus other services. Slide. And then here is both an overview of the total expenditures and then the breakout by CBO master contract versus standard services agreement. And, you know, what we can see here, which is, you know, not surprising, is that in terms of amount, 91% of total expenditures for 23-24 are under the CBO master contract, whereas the remaining 9% are under standard services agreements. When we look at the number of contracts, which in this particular kind of data set is indicated by a purchase order, so a unique purchase order, what we see is that 68% of total purchase orders are going to the CBO master contract versus 32% are going to standard services agreements. The reason for that is that there's just a number of standard services agreements that are a smaller amount, but they're just quite numerous. So relatively speaking, that's what kind of shifts the percentages. Next slide, please. Here's just a visual of the exact same information in terms of count of purchase orders. Next slide. And then again, visual of the same information by expenditure amount. Next slide. Okay. Here, if we kind of just take a look at all of the purchase orders, whether it's CBO master contract or standard services agreement, we can see that the vast majority of all contracts go to CBO providers. So one thing I want to note is while CBO contracts go to CBOs, standard services agreements can go to both non-CBOs as well as CBOs. So any given community-based organization can have a mix of both master contracts and standard services agreements with our agency. Next slide. And again, when we do the breakout by actual expenditure, then the amount that has been expended by CBO across any kind of contract they have, it goes up to 94%. And then just 6% of expenditures for this year, $45 million, went to non-CBOs. Slide, please. I realize that we are running a little short on time. So just wanted to, you know, flag for the committee that our CBO providers are generally exempt from the SLEB policy. So just to remind what the SLEB exemptions are, and sub-bullet number one here shows that nonprofit community-based organizations that are providing services, direct services on behalf of the county to residents, you know, aren't required to be certified SLEBs. And then there's a number of other exemptions. Next slide. So here we're showing SLEB status across all of the executed POs that we had for that year. And in the interest of time, I think if we could skip this one and the next one. Yeah, just, and then one, the last one. There we go. This particular slide kind of excludes our CBO providers from, you know, the picture in terms of SLEB status, and just really focuses on those who are considered to be, you know, non-CBOs for the year that we're talking about in terms of expenditures. And so, you know, here what we can see is that, oh, and I see there's a little bit of a missing piece of information. Sorry about that. Certified SLEBs. Okay. Would see 28% is what it should say there with the blue slice. So 28% of all POs in that year were count 55 went to certified SLEDs for their subcontractors. And then another 28% were GSA waivers, and then 25% were exempt. So some organizations that may contract with us may not be necessarily considered a CBO. So for example, a government jurisdiction or a university or something of that nature, they are non-CBO, but at the same time, they're still exempt. So 25% of those POs fall under that category. Now, federal, you know, waiver, that's another type of area where, you know, a particular funding stream may be exempt from the SLED policies. So there, 14% of overall non-CBO POs fell under the federal waiver where local preference is prohibited. And then finally, just 5% fell under the board. If we translate that into dollars, if we go to the next slide, of the $45 million that was expended by non-CBOs, the dollars do show, you know, somewhat of a different picture in that 43% are going to certified SLEBs or SLEB contractors, you know, followed by, you know, the rest. 26% were GSA waiver, 17%, and then 10% to SLEB exempt, and then followed by 4% for waiver. So that concludes AC Pulse report for this round. And I apologize that there's not such time for questions, but I can definitely stay on.
All right, thanks, Wilson. Supervisor Marquez has any questions or comments?
No, this is just very helpful. Just want to flag and reiterate what you said. This is where organizations are headquarters. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's the only city receiving the services, as many of our CBOs, I would say maybe even half provide countywide services. It's very rare that CBOs are just focused in a certain geographic area. So maybe that can be an analysis we can do at a later date, but thank you for providing this information.
Yeah, thanks for improving on the report. It's getting much more thorough. And I might have to do a little bit more thinking around some of your slides just to make sure I'm on point with them all. But the one question I think I had, when you talk about the 900 contracts for 23-24 fiscal year, it's contracts and POs. So does that also include contracts and POs that the board offices request through Vision 2026? Or do you know?
Question. I'm going to have to clarify with the staff if those are included or excluded, since that fund is, the revenues are outside our budget, but we do have the appropriation in our budget. So I'll, I just have to clarify if that was
approved. Once again, I'm not, what's the word? I'm not being critical of the report. I just need to understand what's contained in that 900, that's all. Okay. And I think that's all the questions I have at the moment. I'm going to try to review this a little bit more and see if there's, if I need to make sense of anything else, but I think that's it. And the next time we get an update from you will be in 6 months or what?
Yeah, we always, you know, endeavor to be sooner, and then we find ourselves annually. So yeah, we can target 6 months for the next. Yeah,
because at that point we should potentially have 24-25 fiscal year data. Yep. Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks. Let's see if we have any public comments on this report.
I have no speakers on item four.
Okay. And once again, I'm just very impressed that through the Healthcare Services Agency for the current budget year, make sure I'm right again, 25-26, yeah, potentially 4,300 full-time staff positions are provided through the contracts. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. Okay, so thank you. So can we see if we have any public comment on non-agendized items?
I have no speakers for public comment.
All right, we stand adjourned.